Hi, Bijan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm switching from coffee to tea, so I'm a little less energetic than I usually am. But my cats are forgiving me for getting to their food slowly today.
You're listening to Boarding Game Games Season 6, Episode 9, where I talk with creator Bijan Aga about the game Time Wars Stellar Assault, as well as how it interacts with other forms of multimedia that have been created in conjunction with it. Thanks for listening as we continue to explore the world of tabletop gaming. Oh, fair enough. How many cats do you have?
We have two. We have one. He's just turned 13. Reza, that's him talking right now. He's a striped guy, and he's getting slower as he gets older. And then we have his younger sister to keep him active, Rosa. We adopted her from Uruguay, and so we gave her a Spanish name. And she's a little gremlin. She loves to eat all kinds of garbage and stuff, but she chases Reza around, keeps him active, makes sure that his blood's still flowing in this old little body. Mwah! I love you.
So Bijan Aga is the creator of Time War, Stellar Assault, and kind enough to be my guest today. And this is a game that is a tabletop board game that is part of a series of content that's going to be coming out, a video game and a comic, part of Jamshed Studios. There's vampires and demigods and everything else. So go ahead and tell us more about the game than that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So the game that's coming out right now is called Time Wars Stellar Assault. So the Time Wars universe is about an ongoing war throughout it goes through from the beginning of history on to the end of history between vampires and humans. So we get to take glimpses of this war all throughout different periods of history. And Stellar Assault is about the war between humans and vampires in the space age. So each player takes on a role of either humans or vampires. And it's a strategy board game where you try to control different planets using your units, which includes stackable cruisers, as well as demigod-like figures called Xenites. And when you get into conflict with the other player, you use cards that you submit secretly to a stack one at a time. And then at the end of that, you flip them over, compare the icons, and determine who wins the outcome of the battle. And I love that part because that's your opportunity to try and bluff. Because you may not have the best icons, but you might have a lot of cards. So you can try and throw a bunch of cards at your opponent and get them to give up early so that you can win the battle. You also have secret goals. So you won't know exactly what your opponent, which planets your opponent is trying to conquer until they've already conquered them. So I'm really excited about it being an extension of the Time Wars universe because that's something that I invented as a very young person, late teens, as a tabletop role-playing game. And we're currently reworking it. It's going to be about another year before we're finished, but we're currently reworking that old tabletop role-playing game into a new, much sleeker, cleaner version. But it originally started as a prompt where my friends in my tabletop RPG group were like, we love all these weird games you bring, because I've been bringing them the Ninja Turtles one, the Star Trek one from the 70s. Like, I've been bringing them all these different TTRPGs. And they wanted me to create one from scratch using all their favorite elements. So they put a bunch of ideas in a hat, and I pulled them out one by one. And the ones that I picked out were time travel, vampires, and superpowers. So I invented the Time Wars universe as basically a writing prompt. And so it's this idea that vampires have always been part of our history and that they're real and they keep hiding the fact that they're part of our history. And we don't learn about them until the future when we develop time travel. So we already lose the war between the vampires in the first version of the timeline. But our time travel heroes get to go back in time and rewrite history to try and make it so that we can win the war against the vampires before it even begins. So that's where Stellar Assault fits in, is the players of the game are playing time travelers who have come back in time to try and conduct a war over again. But this time making it work more in the favor of their side.
Yeah. So with the board game, how much of that theme do you need to know in order to play the game? Or can you just dive right in without having to know all that?
Oh, you can dive right in. I really wanted to make it accessible. So I wanted it to be something where you can start with just the game and just learning about how the pieces move and how the strategy works. And then once you learn that, you can start learning about how those different mechanics fit in with the lore. and how they tie into different story elements. So it wanted it to be sort of an introductory point where you can start learning about the game totally independently of anything else. And as you learn about the game and you learn about other Time War stuff, you start seeing all the little bits connect. You start seeing the connective tissue between them.
Very cool. So obviously the theme came first for you, but how did you start working on the mechanics of, I want to do this with my game and I want my players to have this type of experience. Where did you start with that?
So it was actually really specifically inspired by what I considered to be the high points and also the low points of Star Wars the card game, the living card game from Fantasy Flight. I had a very vibrant community of that in Seattle when I was just back when it was a current product, and it was first of all, I love the game. I thought it was a phenomenal game. It was. The one thing I criticized it about was it being too text heavy. It was so text heavy to try and understand what each card did in context. And I liked the visual element of it. For those who aren't familiar, so Star Wars the card game was a living card game where the living card game means it's like a collectible card game, but instead of random boosters, they have set cards that come in a set pack. So when you buy a pack, you know exactly what cards you're getting. And it was a strategy game where you attacked different bases basically on your opponent's side. And there was this element of bluffing with the cards that you would use in combat because each card would have a certain number of gray circles. I forget what the theming was. I think it was the force or something. But they had these gray circles on the side, and you would ca and a good card may have a card that's really good in combat. May have only a few gray circles, and then a card that isn't that great in play might have a lot of gray circles. And so you want those gray circles to win in the combat, the edge battles. And so what I wanted to do with my game was I wanted to take the visual component where you're attacking different these three different bases, and I wanted to turn it into a much more elaborate sort of board game, like a genuine board game where you're moving pieces around a table. And then I wanted to take that edge battle and I wanted to add layers to it. Because in Star Wars, the card game, the edge battles were almost identical, except that there was only one icon to count, those gray circles. Whereas in my game, Star Wars, Time War Stellar Assault, Time War Stellar Assault, there are three sets of icons, and the different icons and how they play out with the other player determine the actual outcome of battle. There's the blast icons, which indicate the ships or the demigods engaging in long range battle using energy weapons. But then there's also drone icons because there are drones, fleets of drones that get released by the ships that then swarm each other to try and close the distance. And the final icon are the marine icons, which indicate that they have now boarded the ship and are now fighting on the ship to try and capture it. So you could destroy your opponent, you could force your opponent to away. Or you could board their ship and actually capture it as a prize. So there are a lot more outcomes to combat than there was in the Star Wars version because I've moved it away from being individual unique characters that you have to learn all about and towards just being fleets of ships and these demigod characters called Xenites.
Cool. Are there other like bluffing games that have informed how you made the game then?
So I'm actually really bad at bluffing, and that's actually one of the reasons that the Star Wars game was so intriguing to me was because it was like, for example, with poker, I'm so bad at poker because I cannot bluff at all. I'm so bad at it, and I'm so bad at reading other people. But because Star Wars was had more context in it, it had the ability to tell what they were attacking and therefore what priority it was. And and you could see how many cards they had in their hand, whereas in poker everyone has the same amount of cards. So there were all these other more less what I really liked about it was the idea that I could get into the bluffing part while using the logical part of my brain without having to think too much about the more social aspects, because I'm autistic. I have a terrible time reading faces. But if I could think about the logic of if they would bluff in the situation or not, that's what I really liked. And so that's what I tried to bring to this game is context. You have to use context clues.
With the grid and where these different because it's on a hexagonal grid system, with where the ships come out. Tell me more about how the logical bluffing is going to work with that, because this is a limited amount of space, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Although we'll also say we're going to have two sides to the board. So once you start getting used to the one side, you can flip it over and you have a new challenge. So it's a limited amount of space, but the ships also can move only pieces can only move one space at a time unless they're on a gravity space, which allows them to move two spaces in a straight line or in any direction if they're a Z Knight.
Okay.
Sorry, X Knight. I used to call them Z Knights, but then I found out there was something already called Z Knight, so I had to change it to X Knights. So
Oh,
I sometimes make that
no,
mistake.
yeah.
So anyways, so the demigod-like X Knights can move in it can move faster than the ships. They can move two spaces. They move an additional space on a gravity space, and the ships themselves move one space. So it takes a bit of deployment time. And this is something I always try to bring to all my games, is I like fast turns. I want those turns to go really, really quick. I don't like it when you're in okay, so like for example, I've always loved trading card games. But something that kills me about trading card games is how long everybody's turn is. Because the other person is just sitting there waiting for the other person to read all their cards and get through all their options and finally choose what to do. So one of the things I wanted to do was to make this more chess-like in its tempo. So a lot of turns are just going to be move, piece, go. Move, piece, go. Move, piece, go. So it takes a lot of turns to get to where you need to go, but the turns don't go very fast. The longest thing that's going to happen on a turn is combat, and that's interactive to both sides. So I feel like that keeps the pace up, the tempo up really well. So the ships are going to take quite a few turns to get to their destinations, but it's also going to give the other person plenty of time to see where they're going and react in kind. So one thing that I wanted to do about the context clues and the bluffing and the reading the room is each so when so at the beginning of the game you get a random card and it shows you two planets that you have to conquer in addition to the central planet. And that's you keep that a secret. Now, when you do conquer planets, you also gain resources. So when you gain the resources from those planets, that's always a good thing. So you might want to conquer planets other than the ones that are on your card, just on your way to your goal, so that you can have the resources to win the battle that you need. So a lot of the guessing game comes in, is this person defending a planet or conquering a planet that they need to win the game, or are they defending and conquering a planet that they need for the resources for the real battle? And then again, the question comes at you as the defender, is this planet worth fighting for if it's not the one I actually need to win, or is it worth retreating if I'm only using it for resources?
Got it. How did you develop the goal cards in the game? How did that go?
Well, originally we had the goal cards were every possible permutation. And when we play tested with that, it meant that it was just everything was on the table. It was just anything could be possible. And that left us with what's the word I'm looking for? Analysis paralysis, right? We couldn't figure out what the other person was doing because it could be anything. So what we decided to do was we decided to pare it down to it's always a choice between one planet on one side, the green, and one planet on the other side, blue. And we don't use the planets that are closest to the middle. So those ones are never going to be the goal planets. And that way, it makes it so that we're always fighting in the center for the center planet, because either, no matter who you are, you need the center planet to win. And then you're always fighting on the extreme edges in order to try and get the planets that you need in order to win. And then the middle planets in between them, can function as wayward points, way stations, to get new resources and to be able to build up your fleets as they move towards whichever of those two goals they're going toward.
Okay.
So it was a way to sort of funnel the battles into specific zones so that they wouldn't get clustered up in one area.
Right. Okay. So as someone plays, what's the first game like for them? Like is this something where there's a lot of discovery, or is it fairly intuitive?
Oh, I'd say it's a little like playing chess. I mean, I think chess was one of my main inspirations, not in terms of bluffing or even in terms of strategy, but in terms of flow and tempo. So I'd say that there's definitely a lot of, open sky moments at the very beginning of playing your first game where you might have a and that's one of the reasons I made the goals so clear is because I really wanted to try and connect those two dots for first-time players. I have a ship, yeah, I have a planet, right? So probably the first thing I want to do is get that ship to that planet, right? That's like, so I wanted to try and make that the easiest thing, but there's still plenty of options because I didn't want to corner long-time players into specific strategies. So there's sort of a trade-off where there's a lot of blue skying for new first-time players who may not know how their strategy is going to develop or how it's going to work out. But at the same time, there's hardly any limits for long-term players who want to try out new ideas and new strategies, and they absolutely can. There's a billion different ways to approach any given situation.
Do you find that are you tired of your game yet, or how does that go for you when you play it again, or when you play it with new people and you're teaching it? How's that
Well,
going?
we actually have a lot of things under development. I'm currently this is not the first game I've developed, but it's the first game that's gotten this far in development. I have three other games that we're working on right now in the prototyping phase. So I'm still able to get a good amount of variety in my diet, so to speak. I'm not just playing this one game too long. But yeah, no, I think it actually ages really well. I think it matures like a wine. So it's again, I wanted to do something chess-like, and I think in at least that regard, I did succeed in that the more you play the game, the more complex the interactions become, the more sophisticated the strategy. And if you're playing with the same person over and over again, they start noticing your patterns, you start noticing their patterns, and so it becomes like this intellectual dance.
Okay. Well, what other games are you playing then? You f especially ones that you find logical but aren't chess.
The big one right now is Digimon the card game.
Oh,
That
okay.
is my favorite trading card game of all time. I feel that it has probably done more than any other trading card game to make every card valuable. And the way it does that is that the lower damage, lower like power cards are necessary stepping stones in the Digivolution up to higher level cards.
Okay.
So it abs so if you were to just make a deck out of nothing but pure rares, you would have a terrible time because you don't have the cards that you need to support them in the long run. So one of the things I love about it as a trading card game is that all the high level decks have common and uncommon cards in them because they're necessary to building the path for the rare cards. So it has this great flow for a trading card game where the thing that I love absolutely about it is the way that it works with resources. Instead of having individual cards that represent resources like energy in Pokemon or mana or lands that create mana in Magic, there is no cards that do it. Instead, there's an energy meter that goes from 15 to 15 on either side, and it starts at zero. And when you use your energy, it counts down. And if you use too much, it goes over to the next person's counter. So let's say that I have mine at three, and then I spend a card that is eight, then my turn ends and their turn begins with three energy on their side. So it's it allows for a lot more strategic play and a lot less just brute forcing with good cards. And that's the something that I think is just absolutely magnificent in a trading card game, where they so many trading card games make it just a chase to get the most powerful, weird, rare card. In Magic, they make these overpowered planeswalkers. In Pokemon, they're constantly coming up with EX, GX, TX, QX, I don't know. And so with Digimon, even though they have these big, powerful cards, they may be impossible to play. They may cost like 20 energy if you play them on their own, but then only cost 3 if you digivolve it up from a lower level creature. So the balancing in that game, they can put out these big amazing cards, but they're worthless without the little ones. That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Cool. What's the most frustrating non-logical game to you that you're still willing to play, and how would you improve it?
I actually think the one that's most frustrating to me, that's non-logical, I couldn't improve, because it would be Dixit. Because it is literally a perfect non-logical game. It's totally subjective, and it's totally creative, and it's I'm terrible at it, but I love playing it because I just like seeing how it plays out. I don't think I've ever won a game of Dixit, but it's so much fun just to see what people come up with and create. And go, oh, now I see how you that connection. I get it now. Like that's just it's just a bundle of laughs. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Oh, that's awesome. So what are you playing right now? What are you seeing that's interesting in games right now for you?
Well, I'm liking that there's less and less of a divide between the so-called Ameritrash and Eurogamers. Because for a long time, that was such an entrenched divide that it almost seemed like it almost felt like console wars in its tone. The fact that the people were so devoted to the idea of rolling a bunch of dice and referring a bunch of numbers, or doing worker placement and using symbolic measurements of things like, and I really love that modern games are starting to fuse the two into something much more meaningful, where we're getting, worker placement games with dice. We're getting a games that that engage with like really intense theming and maybe even like battle and war, but don't use a billion dice and start using like more simple references like cards and things like that. So I really like that we're moving away from that idea that they're two polar opposites and embracing the fact that they have elements that we can play with and fuse it, as much as we want, much as we like.
Is there a game in particular that comes to mind that you think does that well?
I think the one that really got to me was Dice Masters. Because Dice Masters, if you were to take away all the numbers and take away the theming, I could totally see it being the Euro Dice Game of the Year, right? Because it's basically about worker placement and utilization. I guess not worker placement, but making those figures go up against different figures and then comparing the results. Like it feels very, very, I don't know. It doesn't feel like Ameritrash, for like the classic Ameritrash. And then you add the numbers and the cards and the characters, and all of a sudden it's got this very combat. It almost feels like Magic the Gathering in sometimes, especially when you're doing combat. So I thought that was the big breakthrough. I think it was the one that I noticed the most, in that it was willing to take a lot of risks in not being something that had really come before. Of course, it certainly helps that they had all the custom molds for dice, because that's not something that an indie studio could take on their own. And it was based on a game that was produced not about theming. Then they themed it and called it Dice Masters. Remember, it was something else before. It was Dungeon Crawler, I think, with like basically like parody D&D characters. But it was a big budget game from the beginning because all those custom dice, that is not cheap. That is not
Oh
cheap to
no.
mass produce.
Yeah, no. Not at least initially, right? So
Yeah, exactly.
okay. So Anything else you want people to know about Time Wars, Stellar Assault, or just anything else in general about Jamshed Studios or what you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So Jamshed Studios is an art collective that I founded with my friends. And the idea is that we're an alternative to the normal studio system. So when different games or comics or things come out, usually the studio hires someone to make it, and then the studio owns it. And that's been a problem for like the entire 20th century, and it's still a problem here in the 21st. So we wanted to address it by creating a Patreon account at patreon.com/jamsheedstudios, where people can give, and that becomes our funding that we use to then buy the hardware and software we need in order to make the products that we do. So, for example, when I made the first prototype of Time War Stellar Assault, that was paid for out of our Patreon fund. But the studio does not retain any ownership rights. All the ownership remains with the creators. So I own the game outright, and once when we release it, it will be my personal product. And so it's an alternative to the studio system, and it's pretty much right now the only one doing it that way. And what we're working on is a series of interconnected stories called Time Wars. So we will be, we've already released a comic book called Time Wars: The Adventures of Cobra Olympus. And we're on issue number one. We're currently working on issue number two. And it is a superhero story about a trans Muslim lesbian girl who fights monsters in the dark. And so we're the first studio to release a superhero comic about a trans lesbian woman, a trans lesbian Muslim woman. And I'm really happy with the artwork. It's a real throwback to the mid 20th century masters like Harry G. Peter and Jack Kirby. And we worked really hard on a style guide to make it look and just pop like a real classic comic. It's brisk. It's a compressed storytelling. Again, we're trying to call back to the classics and the but we've still got more mature storytelling. We've got, she goes on a date and there's some misunderstandings, but they're having a genuine connection. And then she gets called away by a message from the future to have to battle monsters. And it all wraps up very nicely at the end. I think the ending is very cute. And we just published that on Kickstarter. It's now available on Amazon as both a physical and ebook. And we're working on the second issue now. That will be a Kickstarter for summer 2024. And then we are also working on a video game. It's not connected to Time Wars. It's a video game. It's totally a passion project. It's a fan project. So it's going to be free to consume at release. And we're going to put it up on our website. Anyone can download it. It is called Digimon Escape from Server Island 2, and it's actually a ROM hack of Pokemon Emerald. So we're going to change the story. We're going to change the monsters. We're going to change the Digivolution mechanics. We're going to change absolutely everything we can, and we're going to turn it into a Digimon game. And we've already got sprites and spreadsheets up on the website, so you can see all the different monsters, all their different moves, how they're going to learn them. And we've got we're this next month we'll be publishing the story document. And so that's a whole lot of fun. And the only way to get access to early prototypes is to be on our Patreon.
Cool.
So that's
Very
what we're
cool.
working on.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate your time. I'm looking forward to seeing the game and Kickstarter and then GameCrafter
That's
on
right. We're
this.
using the Game Crafter for the physical parts. They have amazing injection molded pieces. I will say I'm not a huge fan of their 3D printed pieces, but their injection molded ones are phenomenal. And the quality of the cardboard and the printing, absolutely amazing. We've done several prototypes with them, and yeah, the 3D printed pieces are a problem, but everything else, really high quality.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Bijan, and I wish you all the best of luck in all of your different endeavors. It sounds exciting.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Have a good one.
You just listened to Board Again Games Season 6, Episode 9, where I talked with Bijan Aga and the game Time War Stellar Assault. We also talked about Bijan's future projects. Thanks for listening as we continue to explore the world of tabletop gaming. Happy gaming. Catch you later.